Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. Professor Zada, you were saying, we started with economics and took a couple of good shots at it. Your perspective with fuzzy logic covers a wide range of places where people live, doesn't it? Explore some more of those with us. Okay, mathematical economics took its hit.
Yeah.
How does this apply in other places?
Well, it applies in different ways. Now, let me say something about the way that, to me, came as a surprise. See, when I wrote my first paper on fuzzy sets, my expectation was that most of the applications would be in the realm of what might be called humanistic systems. Mm-hmm. That is, or perhaps living systems, in philosophy, in linguistics, in sociology, and also in biology, in medicine, in those fields in which conventional techniques didn't work that well. You see, in other words, because in those fields, the fields that I mentioned and fields related to those fields, things are very imprecise. The classes are obviously fuzzy, obviously. So that this gap that I referred to earlier was much too obvious to be ignored.
Mm-hmm. Can you define class?
Well, a class, many of these things cannot be defined in very sharply.
Well, then describe it in a fuzzy way.
Yeah, sometimes you have to define through what might be called exemplification. Mm-hmm. So you give examples, but you stop short of actually coming up with a definition. For example, okay. The class of round objects, the class of automobiles, mm-hmm. the class of beautiful women, the class of old women or old men, that's better, or,
or so whatever. We're talking about real world stuff that language wraps
that's
around.
That's the point. In other words, as I said at an earlier point, almost everything that you can think of is really a fuzzy class mm-hmm. or a fuzzy set. Now I use the word fuzzy set because that was sort of a little more technical than mm-hmm. fuzzy class.
So you didn't expect to go off and work in mathematics and computers. You expected these techniques to be applied to real-world things.
Well, particularly in those fields. Not that I thought it wouldn't apply in these other fields, but I thought that the main applications would be in those fields. That is, in fields in which classical techniques of analysis did not work that well. Because mathematics scored brilliant successes in many fields, in physics, many, many fields, in engineering, in all kinds of fields. I would be the last person to deny that sort of thing. So the situation then is this. Today you find that one of the, perhaps in terms of money, the most important fields of application of fuzzy logic is in the realm of consumer products.
Oh, my.
Yes. So if you had asked me in 1965 when I wrote my paper, what would be the main application areas today, it never occurred to me to say consumer products.
You would have said biology and psychology and not washing machines and subway systems.
Well, that's a little bit different. It's a little bit different because in 1968 or so, or 1972, actually wrote a paper called A Rationale for Fuzzy Control. Because my training has been systems and control. In 1966, a year after I wrote a paper on fuzzy systems. Mm-hmm. So I could see that there will be applications in those realms. But consumer products, I never thought about it. Washing machines, cameras, things of this kind. Now, so you asked yourself the question, why is it that today, at least in numbers or in terms of money, most of the applications are in the realm of consumer products? Just to give you one number, Matsushita, company in Japan that sells things under the labels of Panasonic, and very familiar name. In one year, that was a couple of years ago, in 1 year, and this is based on figures supplied by Matsushita, has sold $1 billion worth of consumer of appliances using fuzzy logic. Hmm. Just one company, 1 year, $1 billion worth. You see. Toasters, all kinds of things. Now, in those appliances, washing machines and various other things, You could use conventional techniques. You could. In other words, the question is, why is fuzzy logic used in those applications? Because there is something that is very fundamental, and that is this, that precision is expensive.
Mm.
This is not a part of what I've said earlier. Precision carries a cost. When you buy a camera that's very precise, you pay a price for it. When you use this kind of a tape recorder, which is very precise, you pay a price for it, and so forth. So you begin to see, and this is very pervasive sort of a thing, that precision carries a cost. Sometimes we don't recognize it, but it is there. And an example that I use to illustrate the point is the problem of parking a car. Humans can park a car because it is not a precisely defined problem. If I said you have to park your car within a distance of 1/10 of an inch of something, you could never park your car.
Right. I have enough trouble as it is.
That's right. But given the fact that the final position of the car is not specified that precisely, you take advantage of it. And in so doing then, you find it's unnecessary for you to go out and measure distances or say what is the kinematics of this thing or what are the parameters of the car. You don't need any of those things. And then you begin to realize that humans exploit the tolerance for imprecision all the time. It is a very pervasive...
The tolerance for precision or imprecision?
Yeah. If I said precision, I made a mistake. The tolerance for imprecision mm-hmm. is a fundamental aspect of human behavior. Mm-hmm. If you ask me how old is Mary, I will not answer the question by saying Mary is 23 years and 7 months and 22 days and 6 hours... in 15 minutes and 23 seconds.
Round it off.
At the time.
I say Mary is young. So I adjust my response to my perception of what kind of information do you need. And I try to exploit the tolerance for imprecision. Mm-hmm. So if young is good enough for you, you'll say young. If that's not good enough for you, then I say she's 23. And if that's not good enough, I say 23 and 4 months, and so forth. So generally then, I am minimally specific.
Which begins to mimic the real world.
Exactly. So it turns out that there are many, many problems cannot be solved unless you exploit the tolerance for imprecision. And this is something that was not obvious when I wrote my first paper. And even today, if you talk about the people who are actually working in the field of fuzzy logic, many of them would not be able to say that this is really a crucial point, exploitation of the tolerance for imprecision. So what it boils down to is that in the case of these consumer products, this is what is done. When you making, let's say, washing machine does not have to be very precise, you see. So you exploit that. You exploit that, and you build in sensors that are not so expensive. You use cheaper chips. You use whatever. I'm not saying it compromises in terms of quality, but in terms of precision.
This is good economics, isn't
it? It's good economics. So it turns out that if you mimic this human ability to exploit the talents for imprecision, you can come up with products that for the same price are much smarter. You see, mm-hmm. you can build in more information processing capability into those machines because the components that you put in there need not be very expensive. You see?
And this has...
This is fascinating. This goes beyond what I mean. There's a continuity from the old way of thinking to the new way of thinking. Yeah, I really hadn't anticipated.
And it goes through washing machines.
It goes through washing machines, but also there's an efficiency argument, which is essentially what you've been saying. There's also the solvability problem.
Exactly.
But in the case of clothes, when we say we want a dishwasher or a clothes washer, we want our clothes clean.
That's
which
right.
What we're really saying is we want them clean enough.
That's right.
Because we don't know what clean is. Does that mean the absence of all foreign matter?
That's
well,
right.
No, it doesn't.
That's right.
And what you're describing is a way of getting things clean enough and an engineering, if you will, approach.
Precisely.
A linguistic approach.
That's right.
For figuring out what you really need and then getting there and doing that with a much greater degree of efficiency than
That's
was
right.
the case before.
And when
That's
we
right.
come back, I would like to apply that beyond washing machines.
Right.
Professor Latvizadeh, Bill Russell, and I am Paula Gordon. Stay with us.